Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. This show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to follow our brand new website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Monday, which means we definitely have another great show for you today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And, he's been coming on the show now for a couple of years and just a great, great, reliable, scientific, factual information. He doesn't have to run to Google and look everything up to post it on his blog. He has the information. He's got a degree in poultry science. He's been doing it probably for 40, 45 years. And we love it when Peter Brown is on. He will be on today. And we're continuing his series on supplementation. And today, I believe the specific one he's going to be talking about is vitamin B12, if I understood his email correctly. So we're definitely looking forward to that. But sorry, I was about 1, maybe 2 minutes late getting the show started today, like we were sharing in the chat room. We had scheduled where we're staying. Of course, we are on the road, but where we're staying up here for a little while is only about, I'd say it's the way the crow flies, it's probably only about, I don't know, 10 miles, 7 miles, but the way you have to drive around the mountain to get there, it takes about 20 to 25 minutes to get over to his place. But we went over there to enjoy some supper with him last night. I took all the fixings for really spaghetti and pasta and garlic bread, and fixed a salad, which was real nice, and he was working on some flooring yesterday. He took a piece of carpet up, and he was putting down the, I guess it's the old parquet, I guess you used to call it, wood floor. And so he was having a tough job. He's 82 and a bad back and bad knees and trying to get down there on the floor and piece it all together. It was looking kind of rough. So I said, I got over there and started playing around with it. And he was like, hey, don't mess with that. You'll never... course, in about 5 minutes, I had a nice big chunk put together nice and neatly, but we had to start from his piece together area, which had already dried and set. So we did the best we could last night. I made a lot of headway. Went over there this morning for about an hour and a half, and I got down on the knees and was measuring and installing. And he would stand up at the saw and cut the pieces. So we were doing that this morning and one more evening over there. So we're going to head over tonight. Jen's going to make a special dish she started to make over last month. Really good. Beef tips. You could do it in a cast iron skillet. She likes to cook it in tinfoil. Less cleanup. So she makes kind of a boat out of the tinfoil, and she'll put in the beef tips with the onions and potatoes and peppers and whatever peas or beans you like, green beans or black-eyed peas. You can put, just really anything you want to in there. And she puts a little of a Newman's Own Ranch, no MSG, mind you, in there. And then she covers the boat with that same tin foil and then puts it in the oven for right at an hour. And you pull it out, and it is great. You just, with a spoon, put it in the bowl and go to town. But it is very, very good. She has another one she does with women, I think honey mustard and chicken, kind of the same process, but just a different sauce and different meat. But it's pretty good. So we're going to take that over there this afternoon, and hopefully we'll wrap that project up and take care of that. Yeah, Christmas Chick says, don't remind me about MSG. She just had a big old plate of Chinese last week, didn't share it with us at all. And in fact, left the show to go get her Chinese food and then came back and didn't share. So, gotta love it. But nonetheless, I hope you had a great weekend. Let me just tell you, I don't know if you're, and I hate to say this because of the severe drought we've had the last 2-3 years here in Georgia, but I'm about tired of rain. I was talking to the security guard here at the entrance to this resort, and he says, we will always, as humans, find something to complain about. You know, here's a big brick of pure 24-karat gold.
Oh, man, that is too heavy. I can't carry that around. It's just too heavy. No, man, now I got to pay taxes on it. Nah, so we'll find something to complain about as human beings, I guarantee it. But I was going to kind of research today to see if in my 43 years of living in Georgia, I'm 44 now, 44 years of living in Georgia, if we've ever been 30 inches above normal, ever, in the history of 44 years that I've been alive. I cannot remember. And it's only August, and we're already close to 30 inches above normal. It's insane. Tire the rain. Yeah, I guess we need it, but we needed it up until about 15 inches, but now we're 30, close to 30, depending on, oh my gosh. Rain. I got some outdoor folding chairs. I got a little bit of black spots of mold on the edges I'm going to have to scrub down and clean, and it's just everything's just damp. You get in the car, and it smells damp, and tracking things inside, you know. But, you know, if I wasn't complaining about this, the weeds go crazy, exactly right. Oh, my gosh. But it's August 19th, so it could be 106 degrees. Let's be realistic. So at least now it's kind of overcast and very cool, and it's just wet and dicky. But it's not 106, at least here. So I guess it gives us something to complain about, I reckon. But hopefully you're having some decent weather. But I hope you had a great weekend this weekend. We did, and we're looking forward to a good week. I was a little – I'm going to have to start a petition here at this particular resort we're staying at. I saw on one of their Facebook pages that they were, I looked at the September calendar, activities calendar, and oh my gosh, it's vacant almost. And I was like, what's going on? I was asking somebody here, and they were like, well, it's starting to get into their slow season, at least for about a month. In October, everybody floods up here because the leaves are changing here in the mountains. But we're going to have to start a little petition and then get everybody to sign it, because they've eliminated the Monday night line dancing, which Jen loves to go to. They've eliminated the Tuesday and Thursday morning water aerobics classes. They've eliminated the Wednesday and Saturday karaoke. They still have one night of bingo instead of two, but it's just, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? What in the world are we going to do? Caleb loves all those things. So, so we're gonna have to go talk to this young lady, and because the full timers here and a lot of the members here at this resort, not just folks that stay temporary like we, they pay a yearly fee, which includes their stay plus the amenities. And so now they've already paid for the year. Now you're taking away their amenities. We need to light a fire under these folks and say, hey, what are you doing? These people have paid for this stuff, and now you're taking them away. And I can see maybe after Halloween, because it does get pretty desolate and dead up here November through February, because it's just a daggum cold. But, man, October, last 2 weeks of September and all of October, they got, you know, Oktoberfest up here and, you know, tons of leaf lookers and all that kind of stuff, so come on. But anyhow, I do hope you had a great weekend. We got a great show lined up for you today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First Aid Vet Supply. It looks like tomorrow, Tuesday, we're going to have another great show with Tracy. I never can pronounce your last name. But Tracy with Blue Lotus Essential Oil. I think it's Blue Lotus. Purple Lotus. That's it. Purple. I'm colorblind. It all looks the same to me. Purple Lotus Essential Oils. That's one of our most popular shows recently when she comes on. Lots of great ways to use essential oils on our bodies, in our bodies, around the homestead, the whole nine yards. So gotta love that. So today, the Chicken Doctor. Tomorrow, Purple Lotus Essential Oils. This coming Wednesday, we've got another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. How fun is that? This Thursday, another episode of Back Home Magazine with Richard Frudenberger. And I believe this Thursday, I'll have to look and see, I believe this Thursday, he's talking all about growing food and fodder for livestock, including chickens. So that's going to be this Thursday, growing fodder, F-O-D-D-E-R, I guess, F-O-D-E-O-R, fodder, for our chickens. So a Christmas Chick requested that, and always looking after our listeners, and asked Richard about it, and he said absolutely. And so we got a full lineup this week. We hope you can turn in every day, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio for some great, great information about our lifestyle. And I'm sure your lifestyle, too. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening, including all of our homeschoolers out there that listen on a regular basis, over-the-road truck drivers, the live listeners, the archive listeners, and, of course, the Speed and Seeds that stream our radio show live. We hear from every day, Monday through Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we're glad you joined us today. Already want to head over here to the switchboard, and it looks like Peter has joined us. So let's go ahead and give Peter a big Chicken Whisperer welcome for today's show. All right, I got to love it. Let this little circle stop spinning here. There we go. And Peter, welcome to the show. Appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's starting to rain even as we speak. So we were just talking about the rain. We're coming up on 30 inches above normal, which I don't think is unheard of. Normally we just have so much drought. And I was telling him earlier, I don't know how long you've been on, that I'm going to have to find out in my 44 years of living in this state since the day I popped out of mama. I don't know if we've ever been this, had a surplus of almost 30 inches. It's totally, totally unheard of. Normally it's a, oh, we're in the hole about 16 inches, or just craziness. So, but it's getting crazy. Everything's getting moldy and mildewy and yucky and yeah. So, God, if we had a windstorm right now, we'd probably every tree in Georgia would probably blow over because of all the saturation. Well, that's insane. But other than that, I was telling him too earlier that we would, as humans, we complain about anything. You know, someone could walk up to me right now and hand me a big 24-karat gold bar. Here's a gold bar because you're the greatest. And we complain. Like, oh, man, that's too dang heavy to carry around. Or now I got to pay taxes on it. Give me a break. So there's always something to complain about, I reckon. But very, very, very rainy, and we're ready to get out of the rain. Of course, I was telling them it could be 106 like it normally is in August sometimes when the heat wave comes through. So, but speaking of our backyard poultry and learning about them, I know you wanted to continue our series on supplementation. That's very important with our backyard birds and keeping them healthy. And I think today is vitamin B12 that we're going to talk a little bit about, how that can benefit our chickens. You know, you always hear when people just immediately say vitamin B12, the first thing that comes to my mind are, and it may still be very popular today, but I can remember just a while back, that was the end thing, the thing. If you were tired the least bit, if you had no energy or whatever the case may be, it seemed like everybody was on this B12 kick and, oh, I got to go to the doctor every Wednesday and get my B12 shot and da-da-da-da-da-da. And that still may be very popular today, but I remember a while back it almost became like a click. You know, I have to get my vitamin B12. It was like the popular thing. And so So I'm anxious to hear a little bit about today and how it can affect our chickens and on the road to keeping them healthy.
Sure. Yeah, just a couple of other things that before we actually get right into the B12 itself, which is an interesting subject. Not long, but interesting. Always like to talk a little bit about, you know, what we see here in the office, things going on in the chicken world, disease-wise and what have you. There are a number of cases at the moment that I am aware of. There may be many, many more. And it may be attributable to the rainy weather we've had in a lot of areas, but there's a lot of favus around right now. And it never ceases to amaze me. Those who are really interested in learning, they always impress me and intrigue me and so on. But we get so many off the wall thing. I don't know if it's a denial thing or whatever, but that people just don't want to look at something, and they always pick something that is obscure. And at the end of the day, when you really look at it, it has no relevance to what's being talked about. And, you know, I guess that's the nature of some of the boards and what have you. But so we are seeing a number of cases of that around, and it would be good for people to go back in the archives I don't know where they are in the archive part of it. Mm-hmm. I know we've done Favis at least twice over the last year and some, but it would be worth their while to go back and take a look at it, you know, and learn from it and apply it, the information there, you know, as it may apply to their particular situation. But we're having success treating it. It's not something that you need to jump off the deep end of the earth about. The folks that I've been dealing with that have it are very gracious and very interested in taking care of the situation, and so I'm not necessarily talking about them in any way, shape, or form. But it is a problem that's out there.
Actually, they can go back, and a lot of times this may be good for you too when you're telling some of your customers. I mean, I've noticed this on, again, like I was telling you off the air one day, that out of the 850 episodes we've got, I would say the majority are accurately labeled with what they are. There were times there in the last 5 years, cut me some slack, folks, where I got a little slack and didn't post the topic on some of the shows. So it's potluck there. But the majority of them are there. And if you just Google, like I just went to Google and I typed in Favis Chicken Whisperer, and the episode come up March 18th, 2013, Peter Brown talks about Favis.
Okay, cool.
So if you, whatever the topic is, and then Chicken Whisper, or the topic Chicken Whisper, Blog Talk Radio, a lot of times it'll come up, it'll pull that word out of the description. And so if you're curious, folks, March 18th, 2013, go down and find it.
Cool.
Let me just give you, maybe let's see, there's an episode number. Give me 1 second here. Episode 791. 791.
Cool.
So
cool.
Was Favis, unless we got sidetracked, and then maybe the next week if we came back to it. That's pretty accurate there, folks.
Well, that's good information.
That's
an interruption worth its weight in gold. Think about it. I mean,
no
because there isn't a lot written about it, and you know, most of the people want to know: should I, you know, put the bird down? Should I treat all my other birds, and so on and so forth. Not necessarily. Doing this as long as I've been doing it, you come up with some ideas that you can't necessarily prove because I don't have the facilities and the equipment and the money that it would take for a research facility to do the actual research and find out. But some of these things might be due to a compromise to a degree. Of a bird's immune system, the inability of a particular bird, for whatever reason, to fight off the skin infection with whatever it is, whether it be a bacterial infection, whether it be a viral infection, whether it be a fungal infection, and things of that nature. You know, I'm going through a situation similar. I have an elderly dog who appeared to have a bacterial infection, was being treated by a vet for a bacterial infection, and it turns out at the end of the day that's not what it is. It's a mite infection. It's not contagious to anybody or anything like that, but the dog don't look so good, you know. And, so now, you know, treating for that, and the thinking is, you know, that his immune system is not allowing him to fight it off. And, you know, being treated, it looks like it's, you know, coming around and being somewhat successful. But the issue is, I truly do believe that part of these things get started on particular birds because of some sort of compromise to the immune system. Now, there are many things that can do that. That can be a genetic thing. The immune system is just not up to speed. There be other things going on within that particular bird. That are pulling the immune system nine different directions. Technically, the immune system will respond the best to the first organism that's on the scene. Everything after that is a tougher response. We saw this back in the 80s when they came out with a vaccine for viral arthritis in birds, which seems to have, for the most part, not necessarily gone away, but it's been treated in a different fashion. And what they would do is they would mix the viral arthritis vaccine with the Marek's vaccine, and they would inject that at day of age into the birds. And some flocks would do real well. Some flocks would break with what they called process of condemnations for Merrick's. And when it was looked into real deeply, it was found that the immune system, whichever vaccine took hold first, is the one that got the protection. The other one did not. And that has to do with the immune system of the bird not being up to snuff at day of age. It's very immature. The gut is even immature. It takes another 2 weeks plus for that to take place. So some of these things may happen because of that. It can be, believe it or not, even vitamin deficiencies that allow these things to take hold. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
For instance...
Well, like you were talking about the bumblefoot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why, you know, why would one group be more susceptible to it than another? We talked about biotin the other day, but we never got around to even talking about all of the different minerals that play a role in good, healthy, pliable skin that's going to be able to bounce back and respond to treatment. Okay? So I bring it up because it's out there, and just so that folks who want to know can go back, review the material, and see, you know, what they're up against and make their own decisions from there. But for those that are, having a problem or think they have a problem with Favus, we do have a shampoo-based product now available. It's not on the website. If they need it, they want to call me or shoot me an email, and I'll discuss it with somebody. But it's a 1% ketoconazole and chlorhexidine, so it will take care of basic bacterial surface problems, and it should take care of the Favus at the same time. So a tremendous product to have in addition to the other things that we might use. But so anyway, that I wanted to get that out there. There's some problems running around again with coccidiosis, and I don't know about anybody else, but I'm about so tired of talking about coccidiosis, I want to kick myself in the pants. You know, I mean, this is a simple protozoan problem that has been around since time began, that pretty much, but not all that's ever written or want to be written about it has already been done. Certainly there's ongoing research all the time on it on the commercial side because it's such a problem there, and so on. But I just don't get it that people still don't understand that there is no difference between Coryd and Ampryl. There just isn't. You know, the difference is in the directions, but the product is the same. So it makes no difference if you have Coryd powder and you have Ampryl powder, you have the same thing. If you have Coryd liquid and Ampryl liquid, you have the same thing. Made by basically the same people, made in the same strength, 9.6% solution for the liquid and a 20% powder for the powder. So it just behooves me when people say, well, you're not using the right product. When somebody says they're using Ampryl, I'll say, you've got to get Coryd. And it just... I mean, you know, it's just like the whistle going off on the kettle on the pot, you know. The whistle blows so loud that after a while, you just want to throw the damn pot out the window. So I would hope that everybody would get that. The other thing I want to say about coccidiosis that I think is extremely important, okay, you will have problems if you've never had problems before. If you bring in a bird that has a different strain of coccidia than your flock is used to. The immunity to coccidiosis is not across the board. Your birds will only be immunized to the species of coccidia that you have present on your farm. You bring in something else, and you bring in a problem. And... the other thing that I want to say about it before we embark on the B12 is that once you see blood, if you don't treat that problem aggressively right then and there, it is, and the research shows this, it is extremely difficult to stop it and fix it. And I urge everybody that raises chickens to use good common sense and get on a coccidiosis control program. And it's not hard to do. It's not overly expensive. It might be a little bit more time consuming because you got to do it for 4, 5, 6 days, whatever the case may be. But therein lies your protection program. Now, if that program breaks down, then you have to move on to a more aggressive type program. And I've not put this out there for people before. I have the product coming in. Right now I've got a product that's a little bit stronger than I'd like it to be. But we will be offering here before long, sometime probably next week, Albon tablets. And the way I would do that is for the first day, at least, when you discover blood in the bird's droppings, you want to give about a half of a 125 milligram Albon tablet twice a day, once in the morning, maybe, let's for argument's sake, say 8 o'clock, and come back in at 4 to 6 o'clock in the evening, do it again, while you have Ampril in the drinking water. Okay? And generally speaking, that bleeding will stop by the following morning. And then you go on with your Ampril for another 5 days, and then I would rotate that around with sulfadimethoxine the next time. So you try to build some immunity by going out as long as you can before you start to see the original symptoms of coccidiosis. Generally, if you've gotten to the point where a bird is showing you the blood, you missed the original symptoms, which were the lethargy in the bird, the ruffled up feathers, the sleepiness, the inability or unwantingness to move, and those kind of things. So I only throw that out there because it came up here not too long ago. That's not what this program is about. We've talked this thing to death. But this is another approach. It's an approach that I would take with this particular disease. Just recently, in my own neck of the woods, have had to deal with it in that fashion. Used the same strategy, and was able to stop it within 24 hours, and then continued on after that with the Ampril and the drinking water and that kind of thing. There are remedies. I think the biggest problem I see on some of the boards is this wait and see attitude. And I'll just say this about this: chickens don't have a diaphragm like you and I do. Okay, so everything kind of touches. The air sacs are there in the body cavity with nothing to protect them, basically. The intestines are there with nothing to protect them. There's nothing to separate one thing from another. Something in chickens becomes systemic almost overnight. Those bacteria that are able to penetrate the intestinal wall, they can and they do, all of a sudden now become a huge problem because they're inside the body cavity, a great place to set up shop. It's warm, it's moist, it's comfortable. And getting antibiotics at that level for any disease that's into the body cavity, that's why egg yolk peritonitis is so hard to overcome. So all of these things all play into it. The longer you wait, the tougher it is to fix things. And the tougher it is to fix things. And I will say one more thing, and we're going to move on to B12. When you're buying birds from other people, it would behoove you. You would be the smartest person on the block to say, hey, what do you vaccinate for? You vaccinate for LT? You vaccinate for Newcastle bronchitis? You vaccinate for Marex? How about Pox? Because any of those things that they vaccinate for and you don't, you potentially are inviting a problem in. Not so much with the Marex, other than the fact that the bird itself may become a carrier, because the vaccine does not stop a bird from becoming infected. So therefore, a bird who is protected by the vaccine could come onto your place and still drop it on your place. Not through the vaccine, but through being exposed somewhere else. So you need to ask all these pertinent questions. A person that vaccinates for LT and you don't, that's a red flag. If you don't ask the question, they're not going to tell you. 99% of the time. And I've just gone through this in a very horrid situation, cost a person a lot of time, effort, and money, still not out of the woods. And, unbeknownst to them, the Trojan horse came in and set off a firestorm of events that are just very, very difficult to control. Very, very difficult. There really isn't any help. This particular individual is a great person. He's got to God's end to try to fix this thing as best the person could. And the university people that she's been dealing with, they're just kind of stonewalled her. every time she asks a question, nobody returns phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, that's appalling on one hand, but on the other hand, you know, people need to be cognizant of what they're doing, what they're bringing in. That's why we do these shows. That's why they're archived, so you can go back, you can look, you can see. If you doubt me, fine, go on with something else, but do something. Just don't sit there and watch them. I get asked that question all the time. Well, you know, suppose they give it to them and they die. Suppose you don't. Suppose you don't. I would much rather put my head on a pillow at night knowing I did something
mm-hmm.
than knowing I did nothing.
Exactly. Yep.
So, you know, those few things thrown out there, kick them around, do what you want with them, but they're important things to know. Those smaller Albon tablets will be 125 milligrams. What I've got in stock now is a 250. I would prefer people to use the other ones. They won't be overly expensive. There'll be probably 30 or so in a bottle for people to purchase. And we're in the process now of putting several things up on the website, hoping to get them done by the end of the week, because I've got several mm-hmm. products sitting here that people could use that are available, but they're not doing me any good sitting on a shelf either. But at any rate, so we talked about supplementation on several different occasions. It's a very interesting subject. I mean, what we might want to talk about for a moment, you know, why supplement with anything? You know, I use a complete feed, therefore I don't need to supplement. Well, on one hand, that's true, and I'll buy that very, very readily. If you're using a good quality feed, you probably, you know, over the lifetime of the birds, probably have very few problems. But on the other hand, any disease entity that is going to damage the intestine, any disease problem that is going to impair the immune system, now makes these birds more vulnerable. Sometimes through genetics or a combination of disease, genetics, or whatever, you'll find birds that just don't seem to do well. We talked about it when we did the series on failure to thrive. So all of these things are interconnected. It's kind of like a huge switchboard. Back in the day when the telephone operator sat at a switchboard, she needed to connect your call, unless she pulled it out and put it in another hole, you weren't being connected with anybody. And vitamins and supplements can be looked at in the same way. I think it's important to tell it as such because it makes it easier and more palatable to take a subject that can, you know, it can be a little bit testy at times, big words, a whole lot of stuff, and at the end of the day, won't mean anything to anybody unless it's explained in a fashion that all of us, including myself, can understand. And vitamins and supplementation, I've studied them on and off for many, many years, continue to do so. I've always been my goal to come up with different formulations for things to try to overcome certain situations. I have a program in place now for people who have a problem with a particular bird that we suspect might be Marek's, and we've had some very good success here recently with that particular program, so I'm happy with that. I'm still working on and making some inroads into supplementing birds that don't want to eat and trying to jumpstart that system, and we're coming up and still modifying our system for that, but we've got some areas where that's been working. And part of this is that a deficiency in a particular mineral, a deficiency in a particular vitamin, can hold up the absorption and the usefulness of the other minerals and vitamins. One of those happens to be vitamin B12, a very common vitamin. Like you said, Andy, in the beginning, kicked about from pillar to post, people running down getting their shots of vitamin B12. You know, especially in years gone by, it was very, very popular way, way back. And by the way, this particular vitamin is not very old. Actually, I'm older than the vitamin. Wasn't discovered until 1948, and I'm a 46 baby, so I got B12 by 2 years. back in the day, believe it or not. That's something to be proud of, and I got a leg up on vitamin B12.
love it.
In actuality, how many times have we heard the people say, I'm older than dirt? Well, I'm not older than dirt, but I'm older than B12. But people might not realize this, but back in the day, it was fairly common to die from vitamin B12 deficiency. And a lot of people don't know that. They knew that there was something in certain foodstuffs that if you had a particular type of a disease, pernicious anemia back in the day, was a lack of vitamin B12. And scientists fooled around with it, and it took a long, long time. It took a collaboration of scientists and doctors and patients and everything else, because it was just very difficult, especially back in the day. You think back 1948, if you've got almost any major disease back then, it was called the Undertaker before you were even dead, because you weren't going to make it. And this was one of those particular situations. But it was found out that by eating certain types of meats, especially liver, in short order, could reverse this particular situation. And that may be where the popularity of liver came in. I know as a kid, seemed like we had liver once a week in my house. I mean, it's one of those things where you grew to like it rather than like it.
And you know, I've commented on it. It was I guess it was a Facebook post. Someone had put an article about the great benefits of liver, and I commented, and then I went, and I read, and I was like, and then they had a link to another article about the myths and misunderstandings. But I was like, now, my understanding is that the liver is supposed to filter out all the bad stuff. In a nutshell, that's my understanding, is that whether it be alcohol, poisons, whatever, the liver is a filter to filter out all the bad stuff, and yet I'm going to eat it? Really?
And, what you're saying, is exactly true. It's right on the money. It is a filtering organ, and it is an organ that is generally used to see what kind of residue a particular product or whatever, may have left in an animal's body or a human's body, for that matter. Toxicology studies are based on a lot of things that go on, within the liver and so on. Back when the Roxasone deal, I've sold enough of the stuff. I mean, and we used to, harvest the livers from birds in the field, and they were sent back to the company laboratory where they, I think they ran them through a blender and whatever, and then they looked at how much residue was still in the livers, and there was a time when those livers showed more Roxasone than was I won't say legally supposed to be there, but I would say they weren't happy with the level. Level was higher, and at that time, what they were finding out was the built-up litter was part of the problem. Okay, and the re-exposure of the bird through the droppings and stuff was giving them. So what that does is allows them to cut back on what they were putting in the feed to make an adjustment. So that those things are used that way. So yeah, I go along with you. Say, here you want me to eat this thing, and of course, back in the day, I'm sure. I never questioned it because in our house you didn't question food. You either ate it or you went hungry, one or the other. There weren't a whole lot of options in between. If you put it on your plate, you were expected to eat it. If you didn't like the looks of it, don't eat it. So we were never really forced to eat our food. It's just that if you took it, you better damn well eat it. Otherwise, you're going to sit there till the cows come home. So that was kind of one of the deals. And unless you wanted to go hungry. And in our house, there wasn't any snacking after dinner. So, it wasn't like you could run out and get a bowl of Cheerios or something like that. If you didn't eat at the dinner table, you didn't eat. So you came to like whatever was put on the table. And quite a few things.
What's for supper, Mom? Well, we have two choices. Take it or leave it.
And that's about it. And not a big deal was made out of it either. I see people today make a big deal out of kids that won't eat this, that, or the other thing. One in our house, Here it is. You want it? You don't? Bye. Get off the table. You weren't even allowed to sit at the table. I had to go. And
I got to tell you, there's a picture that I was sent personally, and she had put down, you would probably appreciate this, but the title of it was The Original ADHD Medication, and it was a picture of Dad's leather belt.
In some cases, that probably works. I don't believe, and I know this is off subject by a long shot, but I don't believe for a second that every child out there today is diagnosed with ADHD is truly ADHD. But those children who, because I happen to have a grandson who is a true ADHD, and besides medication, it takes a tremendous amount of time and management. And that may sound strange to people, but you have to have very strict rules, stand by them, like it or not. You know, and all of those things. And when you and the best thing for that I have found for an ADHD child is to be very routine. When you get them out of their element, when you get them out of their routine, then they start to come apart at the seams. They're much, much better in an organized, orchestrated type of thing. You know, I let my grandson be himself. And you know, we have a tremendous relationship. You know, he's a good kid. He's 8 years old. And, you know, it is what it is, but you got to deal with it. And I never have any trouble with him. Never. Never. You know, every now and then.
With all of her degrees, multiple, she's just a few classes away from her PhD in education. And I'll sometimes, there's a skit. I've never watched that episode in my life. People know we don't have television. It was a skit that was taken and put on Facebook. I clicked on it. And it was from that horror show, South Park. And it was an ad, a commercial, South Park characters. And it was like this guy saying, something like, "Hello, I'm Dr. Smith, and I invite you to order my new treatment on ADHD. It's called something like, what's it called? Anyway, it was you know, all strictly about that. And they had three kids sitting in their desks in a school classroom, and my brand new invasive treatment for, you know, all the kids started bawling and crying, you know, yelling and talking and all this kind of stuff, and he just, whack! You know, and then the kid starts crying, and again he goes, whack, and the kid opens his book. And then the next kid starts crying and acting up, and he, whack, and then he opens his book and starts reading. And then the third kid kind of looks at what happened and, opens his book and starts reading. And so I was, you know, like, Jen, check this out. And so she's the first to keep me in line and says, you know, after a decade in the classroom, while, yes, there are probably some kids that are diagnosed with that shouldn't be, or due its lack of attention from the parents, or it was whatever the case may be. You're right. There are some that where, you know, but you're right. I don't think anybody on the planet would not agree that we have a tendency to over-medicate just because of, and I'll throw it out there, and you can hate me and not tune in ever again, lazy parenting. A lot of times where they just, you know, let them do whatever. There's no discipline in the home. There's no nothing. There's just, it's crazy. So, I'm the first to be corrected when I talk about something that Jen, with all her degrees and a decade in the classroom and working one-on-one with a lot of kids and parents, that, their issues, you know, don't discount it, because there are some situations where that is very valid. But then, yes, there are some situations where it's not. So it was pretty interesting how that. But yeah, it's a skit on that South Park, and that when I was doing mentoring, parents were letting their third graders watch South Park, and I'd go in and mentor in the library. These are kids that have never built a model in their entire life, and I would bring in a model of a car, a truck, or something like that. They've never flown a kite in their entire life. And I would have conversations with them and say, why were you up so late? Or he'd mention me, he's up in third grade. I was watching South Park. Okay, they have a TV in their room connected to cable, and then they have a TV in their room connected to video games so they can play their video games while they're watching television.
This is third grade, and it was very sad on many levels. But I was looking at that thinking, are you really seriously? So at third grade. But he enjoyed them building the model. It was a great kid. He enjoyed flying a kite. And in fact, at the end of the year, I gave him a kite and a model as a year-end gift. And we were talking about the kite, Peter, and this has really upset me. But he was, I can't really fly the kite around where I live because there's so many trees. And I said, well, I'm sure the school wouldn't have a problem with you, you know, summertime, coming up here, and there's a big open area behind the school. There's a track. Come up here and fly the kite. This is what he told me. He said, and for a third grader to know this, or to come out, he was like, that'll never happen. My dad's too lazy. So, yeah, and this is a third grader telling me this. That'll never happen. My dad's too lazy. I asked him, what did you get your mom for Christmas this year? And this is a third grader now. A set of shot glasses. So it was just, crazy. Now, I love volunteering at school, helping kids read, mentoring a couple of kids, and the fun with that. It was a really, really, it was an eye-opener. And talking about that. But anyhow, back to vitamin B12. But we always go off on a tangent on something.
Yeah, we always do. There's a whole lot of things I could say about, you know, the what you just said. But I'll try to stick to this here because I can get off the path, too, for sure. Anyway, we get back here talking about vitamin B12. So what makes it so important? When we talked about supplementation, we talked about the switchboard, the roadblocks, the four-way stop sign with something supposed to be in the middle like a roundabout, and it isn't there, so everybody sits at the stop sign because something's missing. And that's the way that's where supplementation comes in. Should it be in your feed? Yes. Is it in your feed all the time? Feedstuffs vary. You look at any book you want to look at about nutrition, and it talks about what a particular value is, whether it be protein, carbohydrates, fats, or whatever, or vitamin content of a particular type of feedstuff, and they always vary, and they always make a statement that it varies by the quality of the thing. So if we have a good rainfall and we have a good harvest with a crop that isn't full of mycotoxins and everything else, then maybe the feedstuffs will be really good. If they haven't been in storage forever before they make it into your feed and they've been dried properly and everything else, all of those things should be there. So assuming that it isn't the feed, then we have to start looking at the bird. Birds that have had coccidiosis, birds that had Merrick's and have recovered, birds that have had any other respiratory ailment, birds that have had other intestinal issues besides coccidiosis, worms, enteritis, E. coli, or any of those types of things, or any other thing, can all wear on the immune system and make the bird more susceptible to these things. Using antibiotics, using certain types of medications, for instance, the Ampryl cord deal, that's going to tie up thymine. There's going to be problems using sulfa drugs from time to time with some of the B vitamins as well. So you have all these variables that are in there, and that's what supplements are for. They are not necessarily meant to be used every day for the rest of an animal's life unless it's deemed necessary for whatever the reason. So that's why we talk about these things, and that's why we go through this and try to go through it in enough detail so that a person can understand it. The big deal about B12, and we talked about trace minerals, is that a small percentage of B12, the molecular structure of B12, and I'm not going to get into all of that stuff, but just to say this to you, is cobalt, the mineral cobalt. So a bird who may be getting all of the B12 it needs but is deficient in cobalt may have trouble metabolizing the B12. So it's a playoff of one off of the other as to how these things are going to be absorbed or whether they will be absorbed, and therein lies the problem. When the absorption isn't correct, then you end up with a deficiency. Vitamin B12, as well, it was the last of the known vitamins to be discovered. The only one that I know that is, has more recently been discovered was a derivative of vitamin C called ester C, and I want to say that was back in the late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there. But other than that, all of the other known vitamins, B12 was the last one, and most likely because it was the most difficult to pin down just what it was. They knew that it was something in that liver, but they didn't know what. And it took quite a while before they were able to isolate it and pin it down. Andy, did you want to take a break? It's just tad after one.
Yeah, that'll be fine. We can do that. It's great, okay. Great information, even though we did get off on a little tangent there like we always do. But yeah,
well, I promise to stay on course so we can finish it up.
Yep, that'll be fine. Folks, we're talking all about or continuing our series on supplementation today, specifically talking about vitamin B12. And there'll be a lot more when we return from this commercial break from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest, of course, being Monday, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, continuing the series on supplementation and vitamin B12 we're talking about today. All right, Doc, we are back.
Okay, so I'll try to stay right on target here so we can finish this up in
okay.
The allotted time, basically. But this B12 is an important factor in the absorption of cobalt, and cobalt is an important factor in the absorption of vitamin B12. There's about, in any given molecule of B12, about 4 to 4.5-5%, depending on the literature, of that would be cobalt. And that's well, on one hand, it's probably minuscule. It is still significant. And this may be one of the reasons why the Replimin liquid with iron works so well, because of the fact that it does contain cobalt, and it contains it in a fashion that it can be readily absorbed almost immediately through the chelation process. And we've talked about that before. And at any rate, the color of the B12, it's a dark red color. It looks like poorly oxygenated blood, I guess you'd call it. But it's a fairly dark red. Smells like just about any other vitamin that you in a liquid form. It basically comes, for the most part, in injectable. There are other types of B12 around, but in the animal world, for the most part, it comes as a as an injectable product. It is a very potent vitamin, and in that, the meaning behind that is that it doesn't take much of this to satisfy the B12 requirements of most animals, including poultry, and it only takes, depending on whether they're layers, broilers, growing birds, or whatever, it only takes between 3 and 9 micrograms. Okay, it's a very, very small amount per kilogram of feed. So, if we look at other types of vitamins, it usually takes a lot more of them. So it is the most potent of all of the vitamins because of the fact that it does not require a whole lot of this to ward off a deficiency or to correct a B12 deficiency. Quickly going back to what you were saying before, Andy, about it being a pick-me-upper, it may not be the action, and I don't know this for sure. I haven't studied it quite that deeply, but it may be the fact that the B12, if it was even the slightest bit deficiency, has then allowed all of the other minerals and vitamins that depend upon it to be absorbed, therefore, probably giving that boost, to some degree. But that's just my thinking of having dealt with this for quite a few years. It is the most complex of all of the vitamin structures. And again, that probably goes back to the reason why it took so long to discover what B12 actually was before they even knew anything about it, and that's why it took so long to get it done. There are two different types. There are actually more than two different types. I'm only going to go into the two that are relevant. The others I've never heard of myself, so it really doesn't matter. But as far as B12 is concerned, there is a longer-acting product called hydroxycobalamin, and that's usually used on the human side. Okay, and the cyanocobalamin is used on the animal side. And I forget off the top of my head exactly, but it has to do with how they're named. It has to do with the positioning of the cobalt in the middle of the B12 molecule. A little more than I need to know. I need to know, how it works, how it absorbs, and all that kind of stuff. So I just throw that out there. It's located in a spot called the corin, C-O-R-R-I-N, which is, I believe, Greek for the middle. So it's located in the middle of the B12 molecule. So absorption of B12 depends on a number of requirements, and that is, number one, that enough B12 be available to be absorbed. I mean, it's kind of like a given. And what we would call a normal gut. Now, when we did our series on gut health and all that kind of stuff, we talked about those things. We talked about a probiotic and how beneficial a probiotic can be. And on a side note about gut health, recently an article, some research, albeit preliminary, I believe it was out of England, pointed to the fact that how hard it was to change the gut flora, the gut microbiota of humans. And so therefore it must be just as hard to change that in animals because of the type of environment that animals are raised in, more bacteria and that kind of thing. So what you're exposed to as a young person generally sticks with you throughout your life. And they took a group of women and were giving them a particular type of a probiotic in an attempt to modify their behavior. And they found that by using this probiotic on a regular basis over a period of time, that they were able to change the mood swings of these individuals, which I think is an important thing. It's something we've been talking about since the very beginning. Whether it be chicken or whether it be a human, the 60 to 70% of the immune system lies within the intestinal tract. And an unhealthy gut can certainly end up with an unhealthy brain, an unhealthy body, or a body that is dysfunctional. So, and there is some research to show that people who have certain types of schizophrenia do not have the same types of microbiota that people who are considered normal, okay? There's an abundance of information around now to show that, and we talked about this at that point too, but I'll bring it back up again because I think it's worth looking at. People who have contracted C. diff, or Clostridium difficile, in a nursing home or a hospital setting or any other place, some of them are not able to shake this disease after months and months and months of antibiotic treatment and not getting anywhere and being very, very ill. The newest technology for that is a fecal transplant from a person who has a good gut microbiota, taking their fecal material and gavaging it down the gullet of a human into their own intestine and pushing the C. diff out. It's amazing that it can be done, but it's something that points to the fact that a good, healthy gut. So if you don't have a good, healthy gut in your birds, their absorption of the B12 is not going to be what it should be. The pancreas of the bird has to be working properly in order to do this as well. People who want to play around with a bird's diet, I recently went through some things with a person, and I'm going through it with one other person that's playing around making their own feed for a number of different reasons. And some people want to make their birds grow faster, so they want to put more protein. Protein affects the absorption of B12. If you're going to raise the protein, you need to raise the level of B12 that it would be in a bird's diet. Excessive iron and so on can be detrimental. Tannic acids available in certain types of feedstuffs. This goes for humans as well. There's a lot of tannic acid in different types of sodas and wines and so on and so forth. All interfere with the absorption of B12. And again, that would interfere with the absorption of cobalt. It would interfere with the absorption of choline and other things within the intestine and within the body. So those kinds of things will all end up pointing to a deficiency. And B12 is not absorbed throughout the entire intestine. It's usually the lower part of the small intestine where most of the absorption takes place. While there is distribution throughout the bird's body, the majority of this is going to call home in the liver. And it's excreted in the urine, in the bile, and through the fecal material. If you have a B12 deficiency, what are you going to see in the bird? Basically, you're going to see poor performance, bird's lack of growth, and those kinds of things. If you are, and this goes back to our our supplementation program we did about hatching eggs and breeding stock and supplementing them irregardless prior to putting birds together so that you don't experience early mortality or late mortality and stuff. But the inadequate or lack of B12 in your breeding stock leads to late deads in the shell. About 17 days or so, most birds will succumb because of the short fall of B12 and possibly even the shortfall of other vitamins that would be dependent upon the B12, the choline, and the cobalt, which is a mineral. So those things are going to add, you know, more fuel to the fire and complicate the situation more. The function of B12, if you haven't figured it out already, would be that because of poor growth, poor performance, so to speak, you would look at that then being having problems with metabolizing proteins, fats, carbohydrates. It has a plays a big role in red blood cell synthesis, and this can a deficiency in B12, amongst other things, can cause birds to bleed a little bit more. So a bird that's injured by a raccoon or a dog or whatever, and has actually, you know, had the skin not just broken but actually bleeding and losing a fair amount of blood, probably would be wise to supplement with a full spectrum supplement, a good solid vitamin electrolyte compound, maybe even some Replimin to help with that. A deficiency in vitamin B12 can also and often does lead to other deficiencies of other vitamins that are dependent upon it, such as folic acid. So there's a number of them that would come to this four-way stop sign, and having B12 not being in the middle, that would be there in abundance but not being able to be utilized because the B12 wasn't there to set things in motion. The same thing as the operator that would connect to your phone call. It would just ring into that one part of the switchboard and never be connected to the other. Same scenario, same type of an idea, the same mentality. When we talked about supplementation the last time, we talked about amino acids. One of the most important, one of the most critical is methionine. And again, B12 would interfere with the absorption of that. And that may be one of the reasons why. I mean, it's unless there is an outright in-your-face problem, you may never know that it's B12 that's causing a particular problem. That's why when I've talked to people or sent people supplements to try and that kind of thing, we always sent the VitaPro B, which is, in my opinion, the best vitamin pack out there. We sent the A-Lite amino acid concentrate, which contains all of these amino acids in a concentrated form. We sent the Replimin liquid with iron, and with putting them together as a combination, you've covered all the bases. You've covered pretty much all of the minerals that, for the most part, certainly all of the amino acids, certainly all of the vitamins. And so all of those things would then jump in there and be there in an abundance and start the motion of the four-way stop being uncongested now and things starting to flow through it, the switchboard reconnecting your phone call to the proper place and so on and so forth. So if you look at it in those terms, I think it becomes a lot more palatable than just a bunch of gobbledygook about things that you might see, because you might not necessarily see them. I don't think it's going to be, unless it's really severe, I don't think it's going to be something that you're going to put your finger on and say, well, it's B12 or this or that. It certainly is probably a deficiency of one or more of those types of things. It can cause problems with proper feathering, poor feathering, and all of these other types of things. And again, it does not take a ton of this stuff to correct it, which then again is going to set everything else that you do in motion and allow all of those other things to go through. Sources of the B12, it is not readily available in most feedstuffs, plant type. and those are not a good source of B12. So those who like to feed a lot of scratch green, and through feeding a lot of scratch green, force the bird away from its normal complete feed, may see some problems that are not necessarily identifiable to them. In other words, well, I'm giving the bird all the food they got. They got a big bucket of food over here that comes from the feed store. They got the scratch grains I give them over here as a treat every day, or five times a day, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, the feathers look like crap, this, that, and the other thing. And therein may lie the problem, because there may be a deficiency in the B12, and again, there may not. But it's not going to be in those scratch grains where you're going to find an abundance of B12 by any stretch of the imagination. Some of the things that, and here again, I'm going to read this. I always let you know when I'm reading something. So these are just a couple of things I pulled out of a chart on sources of B12, and I'll give you a couple here. Liver meal, okay, is very high. Crab meal. These are in parts per billion. So the liver meal will be 542 parts per billion, crab meal 475, fish solubles a little over 1,000, poultry byproduct meal 322 parts per billion. And when you get down to distillers solubles, you're talking about 3 parts per billion. So you can see the huge differential there. So if you're having a deficiency of vitamin B12, you certainly wouldn't turn around and grab your scratch grain and give it to them, okay? Reduced body weight for a deficiency in this. We're going to see reduced body weight. We're going to see lowered feed intake. I already talked about defective feathering. You would certainly see the anemia, similar to what we saw in humans and pernicious anemia. You may see some mortality, although I think that would be on the outer limits of that. I don't think that was something that I would hang my hat on. You would see lowered egg size, so the eggs will get smaller because of the inefficiencies of the B12 not being available, and causing other things to be unavailable at the same time. Hatchability, obviously, we talked about that a little bit ago. You would probably see more 17-day or so dead in shell. And these are birds that fully formed in every other way, shape, or form, just ran out of enough stuff to go around, kind of like having a gallon bucket of paint, supposed to paint the room, and you get down to the trim and you got to go get another bucket. So it's kind of like the same thing. The broom won't be done until you go get the other bucket of paint. We did talk about high-protein diets, so you might want to take that into consideration. Doesn't mean you can't use one. I'm not a big fan of hugely high. I ran into somebody the other day who was feeding a 27% protein, and I couldn't figure out why. Most of the time, when you get over, you know, that 20% plus, you start running into birds that are going to just be excreting out the protein anyway. They can't handle it, can't use it. The deficiency of vitamin B12 looms over your head to some degree. I wouldn't go to a high protein diet because I want to put more weight on my birds. I would figure out other things, what's causing them not to gain weight in the first place. And I would start looking at those parameters. Sometimes just a breed. Some breeds just don't put on weight like other breeds do. And technically, unless it's one of the breeds that's in the standard, you're probably not going to get anybody else to tell you what the growth rate is on a particular bird. And even so, if you're not breeding true to what the standard is, you're not in the same ballpark, you're not the same bird, really, at the end of the day. So you can't even use those growth parameters as an end point. You can use them as a starting point. These deficiencies don't happen overnight. They usually happen over a long period of time. We've said this before. Just because you fed scratch grains today doesn't mean you got a bunch of birds tomorrow morning that are going to be all running around deficient in vitamin B12 or any other vitamin for that fact. Vitamin B12 deficiency can take months. Months. It depends on the severity of the deficiency. It depends on how marginal the birds supply of B12 was in the first place. And if I didn't mention it before, I'll mention it now. It's a water-soluble vitamin, so your water solubles are all of your B vitamins, including vitamin C, and your fat solubles, your A, D, E, and K. The importance of it is the A, D, E, and K are stored long-term. The water solubles are not. It takes an awful lot of B12, several thousand times more than is required to get it to a point where there is some toxicity. So there you have it, the importance of supplementation, especially vitamin B12. One of the reasons why I chose it today to talk about, I think it's a very important vitamin, not to be just thrown to the back burner like anything else. And I'm not against people supplementing once or twice a week with a good vitamin pack and a drinking water as a precautionary thing. I think it's a good thing. And I'm a big fan, as most of you might know, of prevention. An ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure any day. And there you have it, Andy.
Sorry about that. I had my mute button on so you couldn't hear the rain and the fans in the background. Thank you very much. There you have it, folks. It is Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Find them online at firststatevetsupply.com. Great information. He's here every single Monday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, again, visit his website. We say here if Peter doesn't have it, you don't need it. But nowhere else that we know of can you get this reliable information from Peter, who comes on again every Monday. So super information about, again, supplementation. And again, just a tip, we earlier we were talking about Favus. If you want to try to find a topic we've had here, Peter Brown, Dr. McRae, anybody, any of our guests we've had on, if you go to your search engine, whichever your favorite is, maybe it's Google, maybe it's Yahoo, type in the topic name, coccidiosis, the chicken whisperer, coccidiosis, Chicken Whisper, Blog Talk Radio, or the combination of, say, coccidiosis, Peter Brown, Chicken Whisper, and a lot of times you will see that episode come up and be found, and you can just click on it and listen to that. So just a tip for you, one way to find the related episode of the topic that you're actually looking for. So, again, Peter, thanks for coming on, and great information regarding the B12. Now, I'm going to ask this as well, I guess, if people are interested and really doing anything, any of your suggestions, talking about the supplements in the past, the vitamins and electrolytes, you've got pretty much everything they would need regarding that in your store. I know you said you were getting some more things, you're trying to develop this, get some tablets, and other things like that. But, okay, very good. That's, again, first
I'll tell you
state.
Another thing real quick. I know you got to go. The oil of oregano is working wonders on a lot of flocks. I still got this turkey customer of mine over here. We're past the 8-week period where we normally have all kinds of problems. He's not had a problem one with it. So, and I've got other people that are using it successfully for birds that have the nasty bottoms and stuff. So, I know you got to go. I'll keep it short.
We had a lady in the chat room today actually that has ordered from you, and they're waiting to get that in. They've got some. Trying to think what she said that she had some bronchitis and some things like that with her. She's ordered some from me, and she's just waiting to get in to start giving it to her chickens. So, she had mentioned that in the chat room, that oregano, oil of oregano. So very cool. Yeah, look that up too. And it is, it's Chicken DR at First State Vet Supply. If you have any questions about today's show for Peter, Chicken DR at firststatevetsupply.com. We appreciate it, Peter. We'll see you next Monday.
See you, Andy. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. All right, another great episode right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And, of course, we've got programming all week for you. Tomorrow we've got Purple Lotus Oils. Tracy's coming on talking all about essential oils. Again, how we can use them on our body, in our body, around the homestead, around the RV, around the house, in our laundry. All kinds of great things you can do with essential oils. Bug spray, how cool is that? Insect control, using all-natural essential oils. Gotta love it. And then Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Arlena, another episode of Year-Round Gardening. Hope you can tune in then. And then this Thursday, the 22nd, we've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, coming on talking all about growing your own feed, including fodder, for your animals, not just livestock, but, of course, your chickens as well. So you're not going to want to miss that episode. That's going to be a hot one this Thursday with Richard Frudenberg, the publisher of Back Home Magazine. Hope y'all have a wonderful and blessed day, and I hope you can tune back in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.
Ha ha ha.